show.
She was doing a great job of feint.
That is it.
We're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to Pound for Pound, your one-stop shop for all things combat sports. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, alongside Zach Cordova. On the sticks for this week, we got Barrett Spritzer. We also got Chris Carino to give his takes on UFC 300 and a couple news things later on. But right now, it's just me and Zach. And we're going to get into this UFC fight night a little bit. I mean, last week we didn't have any fights. I'm glad that we actually have something to watch this Saturday night. I'm not just going to be twiddling my thumbs around. But that being said, it's a kind of a weird card, and we were saying that before this pod.
It's kind of a weird card, but when I look at it, I think they ordered the card wrong. I think Renato Moicano and Drew Dober is the people's main event. That's what I'm looking for. I don't know about you, but the rest of the card, a little bit weird, just kind of guys getting their names out there. This is definitely not a card for the casuals. This is kind of a card for people who know the sport a little bit more. I feel like it's a little bit hard to get into because there's not really any names that kind of grab the headlines that draw in your attention, I guess.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you that Drew Dober should have been in the main event slot for this, but I kind of understand why they didn't do that, and that's because of Drew Dober's ranking and also Renato Moicano, his opponent's ranking. Right now, they're number 15 and 13, respectively, in the lightweight division. Versus the main event, Roman Dolidze versus Nasruddin Imavov, both those guys are number 8 and number 11, respectively, at middleweight. So I understand why they put that fight in the bigger slot, but despite that, though, I think that the Dober-Moicano fight is way more interesting than Dolidze-Imavov.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, when you see those two names, I just think of, I mean, I think we've talked about it before on this podcast that Drew Dober, every time he fights, is a must-watch. I mean, he's exciting, flashy knockouts, just absurd amount of power, I mean, and a chin that just never seems to crack. I mean, we saw him get steamrolled by the steamroller, mm-hmm. Matt Frivola, but that's the only time in his career that we've ever seen this, like, granite chin of his ever show that it's weakened. But, I mean, every time he fights, it's must-see TV. Renato Moicano as well. I call him the poor man's Oliveira.
You know, that's actually kind of a great comparison, I'm not going to lie.
Definitely. He's also somebody that every time he fights, you kind of got to see it, especially when he's on the mic afterwards, after that moment at MSG, yeah. If you remember that.
He's developed, like, a really funny personality on the mic that I love a lot. Like, I don't know if you've seen his streams also, but, like, he'll rank, like, UFC fighters that he's fought in the past, like, just fun stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, despite that, 100%, I mean, that's a fight to watch. Kind of, again, poor man's Oliveira. I totally see it.
totally reminds me of him, just really close, but not exact. But
yeah, exactly. It's like almost as good, but not really. There's just a couple shortcomings, yeah. But we'll get to that fight. I do want to talk about that in depth in just a little bit. Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about not the co-main, but I guess the fight right before that, the third to last fight in this fight night, and that is Randy Brown versus Muslim Salikov. Muslim Salikov has one of my favorite nicknames in the UFC. It's the King of Kung Fu. it's such a goofy nickname, but he is a Kung Fu fighter and has some really interesting kickboxing, and off the back of that, just kind of weird techniques, weird striking techniques that have worked out really, really well for him. I'm interested to see how he does in this fight against a really lanky guy in Randy Brown. Who's great against the cage with clinch. He's really good with knees. Also surprisingly good with grappling as well. So, Zach, just to start us off with this fight, who do you think, what intrigues you about this fight?
I mean, to me, it's just kind of figuring out, just kind of seeing how Randy Brown kind of handles somebody who has power. I think in the past, we've seen him fight against like a Jack Della Maddalena, and he struggled. And he actually got subbed in that fight, not knocked out. But we've seen him in moments where he looks, I want to say, uncomfortable when there's a guy in there who can really land a big shot. Because when I watch Randy Brown fight, I don't see him as kind of like a guy whose shots really sting. He's just kind of somebody who pokes at you and just will poke at you until basically he'll outpoint you. Or basically you just absorb so many strikes that eventually you get hurt. But I just never see him as somebody with like a lot of like sting on his shots where Salikov is one of those guys who can put you out pretty easily.
Yeah, no, Salikov does that, have that, you know, one-hit knockout power. But off the back of that, I do agree with you. Randy Brown does seem kind of like, he kind of has like the Michael Chiesa ability of freaking out under pressure.
Yeah.
Which I hate to say because I love Michael Chiesa as well as Randy Brown. But I mean, like, I'm going back to Randy Brown's fight against Vicente Luque, where he got caught really bad and knocked down that fight. It just seems like whenever he comes up against a really strong striker, he just kind of freaks out a little bit, almost like unnecessarily, to the point where it puts him in really bad spots. And I know for a fact that Muslim Salikov would 100% capitalize off of that. So
definitely.
I think that's the thing that gets me most worried heading into this fight. But I will say, to that kind of the other side of that same coin, Muslim Salikov is 39 years old. He's getting, you know, kind of towards the end of his career. So I don't know how much gas he really has left in the tank. I'm pretty sure his last fight was a loss, yeah, to Nicholas Dobby. And before that, yeah, he went 1-1 in 2022. So seems like his career's kind of on a downturn a little bit. But in terms of picks, who do you got in this fight?
I mean, I got to kind of bring up, too, what you just said about, like, him running out of gas. And that's the other thing I have my concern with him is the gas tank. And the gas tank after the first round. And that's why I kind of feel like this is Randy Brown's matchup, where this is one of those ones that could go the distance. And if it does, it's going to be Randy Brown's fight to win. And basically, I think the way that if Salikov's going to get it done, it's going to be by knockout. I don't see it happening any other way. I don't see him winning a decision against Randy Brown. But I just think that this is the matchup where Randy Brown really excels at. I mean, besides the knockout power and everything where he can have trouble, I think after that first round when Salikov's a little bit tired, a little bit gassed out, I just think he's going to point him to death, and I think we got a 30-27 on our hands.
Okay, fair. I think it'll definitely be a bit closer. I think Salikov might land one or two big shots. That kind of puts Randy against the cage, but I do agree with you. I think Randy's going to get the win. Probably going to be a unanimous decision. We'll see. I'm very interested with that fight. Moving on, though, kind of circling back to the Sonato Moicano-Drew Dober fight. Since we already previewed it a little bit, I kind of just want your thought process on who you think is going to win this fight and kind of why.
Ah, man, this is a hard one for me to pick. I mean, I like both fighters. I really do. That Money Moicano, Drew Dober, uncrackable chin. I mean, this is a hard one for me to really pick. I mean, Drew Dober is one of those guys that if he lands, it's devastating. Mm-hmm. But if Moicano can get him to the ground and really utilize his ground game and get to his submission, I mean, he's kind of hard to stop when he's there. It's just, can Dober defend the takedown?
Very, very true. I think, at least in my eyes, I think that Hinato is not always the smartest game planner heading into a fight. So honestly, I don't know if grappling is going to be that big of a factor in this fight overall. I definitely see if Moicano gets hurt, he'll, you know, kind of panic wrestle maybe a little bit. Off the back of that, though, I don't know. I think Drew Dober's last fight got me really, really worried. And if I'm remembering correctly, it was that Matt Frivola fight, right? Where he got knocked out, or did he have another one?
He's fought again since that, and he won that one by knockout.
Ricky Glenn. But anyway, though, I will say, just to kind of service my point, I'm worried in that Matt Frivola fight. I was so excited heading into that fight, and I think that genuinely his chin got cracked after he got knocked out there. And I know Hinato packs a lot of power into his punches. So off the back of that, I don't know. I think that Dober might not be able to fight the same style that he used to.
I don't know about not fight the same style, because we saw him come out in his next fight and he fought the same way.
I don't think
Drew Dober knows any other way than I'm going to stand in the pocket and trade with you, and whoever lands first is the best man.
See, that's the thing, though. I don't think Ricky Glenn is on the same status as Hinato Moicano, as much as we're kind of, yeah, you know, saying no, he's a discount Oliveira. He's still a very, very good fighter, very good striker, grappler, you know?
So. I agree. I also think, though, the time off concerns me a little bit about Moicano. I mean, he's coming off a pretty significant knee injury, I'm pretty sure. So that concerns me in terms of the grappling, too, because when you have that kind of knee injury, you don't have the same push that you can kind of get to a takedown, maybe. I don't know how affected he is, how well recovered he is. He took a lot of time off. I just wonder how that affects him in the octagon, especially going up against a Drew Dober who, from what I remember, throws a pretty good leg kick. And
yeah,
I mean, it's just one of those ones where it's going to be a fun fight, and it's just going to stay in the pocket unless Moicano gets hurt and shoots. But it's just kind of who lands first. I feel like that's just the that's just how it goes when Drew Dober is in the octagon. It's just whoever's going to land that shot first.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think for my pick, I'm definitely leaning more towards Dober. I think that he's going to be the one that lands that one shot more, or maybe he'll be able to hang in there just a little bit longer than Moicano. But I think this is going to be a dangerous fight, and it's very, very interesting. So do you have a final pick? You think Dober, maybe Moicano?
I'm going to say Dober just because I'm a fan. I'm a fan of Drew Dober, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't. If I was a betting man, though, I would say that this fight ends with a finish. So if you want to keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think this fight does not go to distance whatsoever. But moving on to this main event, again, kind of a weird main event, but still interesting to talk about, though, stylistically. We got Roman Dolidze, number 8 ranked, taking on Nasruddin Imavov, number 11 in the middleweight division. Should be a fun fight. Both of these guys haven't fought in a while. Roman Dolidze's last fight was a loss to Marvin Vettori. And then for Nasruddin Imavov, his last fight was actually a draw to Chris Curtis. And before that, he lost to now former champ Sean Strickland. But still kind of an impressive last couple of fights. Both of these guys are on a bit of a skid, kind of looking to come back and, you know, build some hype for their name in the middleweight division, kind of start a new run at the belt. So off the back of that, what's interesting for you what's interesting in this fight for you, Zach?
I mean, for me, I feel like Imavov is the better fighter in this matchup. I think in terms of his style, the way he fights, I just think that this matchup is built for him. Dolidze is kind of like one of those dudes who's just built like a tank, kind of like bully style, where he's going to press forward at you and try to take you down. And I think the key for Imavov here is to just keep this thing standing and just try to, I think even in that Strickland fight, he looked really good. Even though he lost, I think we saw him land some good shots, kind of piece up Strickland a little bit. And Strickland is kind of one of those guys too that he's hard to hit. And I feel
he's a very defensively minded boxer.
Definitely. You know? And if you're able to hit him, I feel like you can land on just about anybody else.
Yeah, looking at that stat line, Imavov in that fight, or how do you pronounce it?
I think it's Imavov. I could be totally wrong.
I don't know. Either way, Nasruddin, I guess that's what we'll call him.
I think that's fair.
In his fight against Sean Strickland, he landed 131 total strikes. Sean Strickland landed 194. He definitely kind of edged that fight out. Strickland did. But still, though, just hang in there with, you know, a guy that went on to beat in Israel Adesanya, a guy that's that respected in the striking realm. I mean, pretty impressive stuff, and that's not even his primary skill set. You know, so off the back of that, this is an interesting fight for me because at least I've always kind of viewed Roman Dolidze as kind of like this prodigy in middleweight, at least initially in his UFC career. I think maybe that storyline has been tarnished a couple times, you know, obviously through his losses and everything like that. He hasn't looked perfect. But at least when he first got into the UFC, I remember him, like, calling out to his coaches, like, which way should I finish this guy? As the guy was, like, laying on the ground, like, should I go for a leg lock or something like that? And just, like, stuff that made him seem very, very in control and very experienced despite being a UFC newcomer. But as we saw, as he got, you know, a bit more experienced in the UFC, that wasn't the case, and he did kind of run up against some brick walls.
That brick wall being Marvin Vettori. I mean, exactly. Another guy with an uncrackable
like
chin.
An actual brick wall, Marvin Vettori. Yeah. So off the back of that, do you think that Dolidze can get it done and kind of get a new start in his UFC career with this fight, or do you think Imavov is just too good and that good to kind of stop him?
I think it's one of those fights where he's going to have to push the pace. He's going to have to really enforce his style of fighting, which is kind of like that bully kind of fighting. Like, I'm going to impose my will on you because I am the bigger man. And I think if he wants to get it done, he can't stray away from that game plan. I think he's got to look for his takedown, kind of utilize his own strength, but also be a little bit more patient when looking for the shot. He's a guy who packs a lot of power. He has 7 knockouts on his record. But I think Nasruddin is also just, he's a good fighter, and I just, for me, I don't see him losing in this matchup, especially when it comes to 5 rounds. This is his, I believe, his second crack at a UFC main event. I believe he lost one, Was it the Strickland fight? I believe it was the Strickland fight.
I think it was.
This is his second crack now at a main event, going five rounds, and I think that experience means so much more than people give credit to.
Yeah.
Because three rounds versus five rounds is a different game, so that's why I think he has the edge in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't...
I think I'm leaning towards your way as well. Yeah. I mean, looking at the recent records in the UFC, the one kind of outlier for Imavov is that he has a loss to Phil Hawes, who I view as, you know, a good fighter, but not really that competitive by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a weird outlier. But despite that, though, I just think that the kind of pool of talent that Roman Dolidze has fought is not, I don't know, it's something about it is not as impressive as what Imavov has done in the UFC, which is funny considering that Dolidze has fought Phil Hawes and actually knocked him out, which is obviously way more impressive than losing to him. But yeah, just, I don't know, Dolidze's losses to like Trevin Giles was just something that would, like, it just seemed very, very disappointing. And I don't know, it just didn't seem like he was ready for that next level of competition, especially considering the middleweight division that's so stacked now.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I'm definitely leaning more towards Imavov. I can see more of a decision, five-round decision. Are you thinking anything in terms of finishes, decision, split decision?
That's another tough one for me. I kind of
hate to put you on the spot, but
I feel like if it's Dolidze, am I pronouncing it right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe so. If it's going to be Dolidze, it's going to be finish. I think that's his route. I think he's got to go KO or sub. Just try to impose his will on the ground if he can. But Nasruddin, I think he edges out decision here, and I think this goes the distance. I think he's going to really test that gas tank because, like I said before, three rounds versus five rounds, different ballgame. And once you have that experience, you never forget it, I feel like. And going five rounds with Sean Strickland is that's a test in itself. So to be able to go five rounds with Sean Strickland, come back and do another five-round fight, I'm going to give him the edge on this one. I'm going to say decision for Nasruddin.
Gotcha. There you have it. There you have it. It should be a very, very fun UFC fight night to watch. We'll break down the results next week. But now we have some talk to get into. That is UFC 300. WFUV's very own Chris Carino is going to be entering the studio in just a few moments here. But my great co-host, Zach, has some tweets saved between Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje. We also got some trash talk from Conor McGregor in the mix, too. A lot of interesting stuff. Chris, how are you doing?
Fantastic. I just found out one of my classes is canceled. What a way to start the day.
That is huge.
It's been a whirlwind of a week traveling with women's basketball, which has been awesome. It's been like everything I've dreamed of it to be, and it's been very productive as well. I just wanted to let the cage heads kind of get their talk in for a little bit, and I'm going to hop in for more of the broad main stories and, yeah, just have some fun. It's a good vibes on this Thursday afternoon, early afternoon.
Yeah, very early afternoon.
Yeah.
So, Zach, do we got those quotes?
Yeah, I definitely do. If I have a stroke trying to read these on air, please forgive me.
I'll never forgive you.
So Max Holloway opens up his trash talk with a tweet to Justin Gaethje saying, Las Vegas war doesn't know that when octagon can we so when want to slugfest drop hurt first yes so baddest mf'er.
Did you have a stroke or
that was
no oh,
after
okay.
a little couple times of practicing, I'm not gonna lie to you.
It came off clean though, Carlos.
It came off clean, but
sounds like a standard MMA tweet, honestly.
Yeah,
maybe as somebody who's
that was messed up,
put the gloves on before and been hit in the head a couple times, maybe
hey,
I
what up Cordova,
understand it a little bit. I can understand the lingo a little bit more, kind of understand how it goes after that. But Gaethje actually responded to him talking a little bit of, if you want to call it trash, back to him.
Well, it is trash. Go on.
Saying, brother, you know don't when hit that. I so when knock down who to title. Vegas, remember to the chin, I remember.
Wait, I got to see this tweet myself. This sounds like gibberish.
It doesn't seem real, but when I sat down the other night and I was scrolling endlessly through my Twitter and I saw it, I almost freaked out. I thought something was wrong with myself.
Yeah, I don't think it's you. I think it's them, if I was going to guess. I mean, how else would a BMF trash talk go?
That's what I was about to say. I mean, I don't think there's any other way a BMF trash talk can go. That is very interesting trash talk, to say the least.
What is your guys' thoughts on the BMF belt?
I like it. I think it's very fun, especially for fighters that aren't going to get the belt. Like,
mm-hmm.
I think that...
It was made for Nate, and then he didn't win it.
Yeah, exactly, pretty much. I think, like, for, like, people like Gaethje and, like, maybe Dustin Poirier more so, because Dustin Poirier, like, is just, like, kryptonite to getting a UFC belt every single
time
he challenges it.
Well, interim, but yeah.
Yeah, true.
He held a belt at one point.
He held one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, despite that, though, I think that those guys are actually a bit more competitive, so maybe that's not kind of the route to go, but I like it as, like, kind of like a thing, like... Give it to a Jorge Masvidal journeyman. That's not going to make it to the belt.
Yeah,
you know?
I have kind of mixed feelings on it because I do think it was kind of invented because they had a UFC card that didn't have a title main event, so they were like, "We need to create a title now and have The Rock give it out for some reason." Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's kind of grown on me. I think it's almost a novelty. I feel like if Dana saw it in another company, he would call it a gimmick.
Yeah,
but because 100%. It's in his company, he thinks it's awesome. I don't know. It's similar stupidity to how when he talks about the power slap and how much engagement it gets online. I feel that way about the BMF belt. I just feel like it's blatant hypocrisy on like every level from Dana, and I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. But from your sense, those kind of fighters, the Masvidal, Nate Diaz, the fan favorites that aren't going to topple a division and dominate a division, I think it fits a good niche. I think.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it serves purpose.
I just wanted to get thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, I also want to say, I mean, the two BMF title fights that we've seen in recent history have both delivered, I think. I think the Nate Masvidal fight was a good fight until it was eventually stopped by a doctor.
Yeah,
but I also think
that doctor so much.
Yeah, no, definitely. That Gaethje Poirier fight, though, was fun. I mean, we saw the knockout, and I don't think they've been bad fights. I think they're fights meant for a guy like Justin Gaethje, too.
Yeah.
But, just like you said, I mean, is kind of like a money grab just so you can throw it in the main event when you don't have anybody else to put there.
Right. Yeah, 100%. I think when it first got introduced, it was kind of like a cop-out, don't get me wrong. I bought tickets for that event. Like, I was there, and I was like, yeah, this is like, I would rather see a title fight.
Wasn't
you know?
The co-main a women's title fight? Like, wasn't that the thing? They didn't want to put on a non-title fight ahead of a title fight, so they created a belt. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Not positive.
Not totally sure if that, he's looking, but I mean, I think it, I mean, again, another excuse too to have a 5-round fight compared to a 3-round fight too.
Also
I mean,
true.
Which kind of is to the fans' benefit. I feel like when you look at a Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway matchup, because that's one who we've never seen Max Holloway get knocked down in the UFC, and going 5 rounds with Justin Gaethje without hitting the canvas is probably one of the hardest challenges you can have as a UFC fighter.
Yeah, and I saw the story about him when he was a toddler biting the child. I know you guys know that one.
Yeah.
But it would be almost interesting if they made the BMF belt no weight class. So just go like...
I think they kind of did that at least a little bit because like it started off in welterweight with Nate Diaz, Jorge Masvidal, and then out of nowhere it's just now a lightweight belt. So like
it should be weight class versus weight. Like if Dustin wants to hop in there,
you're saying so like
yeah,
for you want like a light heavyweight to come down and try to steal from Dustin Poirier.
Yeah.
Move that. You know what? I kind of love that.
You can't tell me Poirier Gaethje wouldn't be electric.
Yeah. No. I mean.
Or what were you guys thinking?
I mean, you could do
Poirier who? Like, who are you? Because I want to get Dustin in there, but I just don't know who the opponent would be.
For the BMF, though?
Yeah.
Got you. I mean, you would have to do Gaethje since he holds it.
Wouldn't that
right
be
now.
Electric? You think either of them are in danger in there? I don't think so. I think both of them could hold their own.
Yeah.
I don't know. Interesting.
You're saying Dustin versus Gaethje? I mean, that's what we just saw.
That's what I'm just saying.
But again, for a third time?
I think the BMF belt adds a little flavor.
I do
want to
see that trilogy.
I would love to see
that
trilogy, but
I think
is deserved?
The BMF belt adds like a texture of interestingness to the trilogy that like gives it something to fight for because that trilogy, the last fight of the trilogy, is not going to have any incentive except for probably that.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
But it's also the question is he still holding it? Or does Max Holloway somehow come up to lightweight and upset him and take that BMF belt?
I don't think so. What do you think?
I think it's too early for prediction right now. I'm not going to go against Max Holloway in front of Andrew because he might get a little bit upset with me.
I'm going to have like a 5-paragraph counter-argument at the ready.
I won't be on the show next week if I said Max Holloway's going to lose that fight.
You have full faith in Holloway against Gaethje?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I don't. I mean, I'll be quite honest. I love Max Holloway, all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, like Zach said, you have to stand there in front of Justin Gaethje for 25 minutes of fighting.
Scary.
And to not get knocked down, that's a very tall ask.
Yeah, like, he looks like he eats crayons. He's a scary dude.
Did you see him with the shaved beard? Yeah. The shaved beard is crazy. I don't even
Doesn't
know.
Doesn't he look like he eats crayons?
Does he look like he eats crayons?
Like, kind of.
When he wears his glasses, he looks like one of the kindest dudes I've ever seen. And trying to explain to people that is the BMF, the UFC, is sometimes a tall task.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not even eat crayons in like a mentally disabled, like inarticulate way, but more in a way of like, this guy
them.
Will just do whatever. Yeah. He'll eat crayons and then storm at you with fervor.
I mean, fair.
And he'll
fair.
Also say the purple ones taste better than the orange ones, which I don't really understand.
Well, speaking, we're not following up on that anymore. Speaking of Dustin Poirier, though, in the BMFL, Dustin Poirier's next fight apparently canceled, like, just, like, maybe 20 minutes ago.
Wow.
He just tweeted out, my fight's still off, but I'm still training, like, something to the tune of that. But, yeah, his fight at UFC 299 against Benoit Saint-Denis officially kind of done now. With that, we also have another cancellation that's for UFC Atlantic City. I believe Sean Brady pulled out of his fight, even though he never signed a contract. Dana White kind of just announced it like it was 100% going to go through, which is weird. But, I mean, I kind of understand because I had a bunch of other big fighters like Chris Weidman's on that card and all that, you know. I understand.
I think realizations were made in the UFC headquarters like, hey, we don't want to go to Atlantic City. No? I mean, have you guys been there? It's not... what it used to be. It's not where Tyson fought in the Trump Mahal or whatever they call it, the Trump Hotel.
Yeah.
Where he's fighting for World Heavyweight Championships. I promise you, it's not like that anymore. Mm. I can't believe UFC would even have an event in Atlantic City. Where would they even, like, the convention hall? Like, I don't know.
Let me look it up.
It's a very confusing situation.
I'm not sure. Is it still, did they cancel the event altogether? I only heard about the main event.
It's still happening.
I think it's still happening.
I was under the impression the event got canceled.
No, just the main event is off.
Like, where is that being held?
All right, let's see. Hold on.
If you guys have been there, you understand.
I've never been, so I couldn't tell you.
Atlantic City is one of the worst. It's like all the bad parts of Vegas with none of the glamour, none of the fun. It's not a good time. I'm assuming Andrew might try and maybe
get
some sort of credential for this. If it's close.
Yeah, I might try.
His eyes lit up immediately.
The way you're explaining it, I don't know if he wants to.
No, I don't think he does.
No,
but
that's what I'm saying.
A cage head like Andrew, he'll go to Antarctica for some cage.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
But Boardwalk Hall, if you know where that is.
Sounds horrible.
Yeah, it does sound kind of like deepest pit of hell. But anyway, I'll be there.
Good P.F. Chang's. I've had a good P.F. Chang's in Atlantic City.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Post-fight meal.
I
want to ask, I mean, like, what is up with all these events being announced without guys being signed? I mean, I know
super
recently,
weird.
I'm not sure if he's signed at this point yet, but
I had a similar
Paulo Costa.
I had an idea.
Yeah.
It brought me to the, you know, eyes being bigger than your stomach kind of thing. Like, that's kind of how I think about those events with the UFC right now.
I agree, and I think it's led to a lot of these moments where guys are pulling out of fights last minute. I mean, like I just mentioned, Paulo Costa is fighting Robert Whittaker in 2 weeks. I'm not sure if there's an update on that, if he signed, but I remember he was on the MMA Hour, I think, 2 weeks ago, and he said, I have not signed a guy. I haven't even seen a contract. UFC hasn't even emailed me about this fight. And I'm
like,
just,
that's a little shady.
Like, that's crazy, because this fight is happening in 2 weeks, and he's the co-main event.
With side tangent about Ariel, because you mentioned the MMA Hour, he just said him and Dana haven't talked in 8 years. And he said if he walked out of this building and got hit by a bus, Dana would celebrate. Like, it's serious animosity on Dana's side. I don't think Ariel cares as much, but ever since that Brock situation with UFC 200,
it's never been the same
at all. It's
so
wild to see.
Exactly. It's honestly, as much as people want to talk about, like, ruined friendships in the UFC and everything like that, from Colby, Masvidal to Chuck and Tito or whatever.
Yeah.
Ariel and Dana, that's, like, crazy how they went
insane.
From, like, kind of, not, like, I would say best buddies. Like, I don't think they were hanging out.
They were
buddy-buddy,
though.
Yeah, they were friendly, though. And, like, in terms of, like, UFC coverage, Ariel had, like, the golden ticket. Dana gave him, like, everything in terms of coverage.
Yeah.
Like, one-on-one interviews, whatever you need, he had it. And after that, you know, he kind of violated that trust with the whole Brock Lesnar thing. It was all over. It's crazy.
And when Ariel got fired from ESPN, he said he left ESPN. He got a text from a random number, and he says he knows it was Dana. And it was a text that says, we finally got rid of you. And it's just so wild that a guy who's done that much for the sport and has easily been the most prominent journalist in your sport, done so much for it, you're just so negative toward it. It was a side tangent because you brought it up and I saw it last night, but what an interesting situation that is.
It really is, because I do have my gripes with Ariel Helwani. I don't think he's perfect.
No.
I think that we can all kind of agree on that. But despite that, what he's done for the sport is second to none in terms of coverage. Like, he has been a part of so many great moments in building the sport up, and he's able to, I don't know, illustrate the history of the sport so well that, yeah, just to kind of write him off as just another journalist or just kind of like a scumbag, I don't know.
He has to commentate on like KSI fights. It's brutal.
I know.
Get that guy back at UFC events immediately.
Exactly. One last announcement. Where does Kevin Lee fit into all of this? We'll finally find out since he's coming back from retirement. Who knows what organization or weight class he just wanted to come back, and it's been six months since he retired. So, yeah, I guess welcome back, Kevin Lee. I thought it was kind of over, so next time he retires now after this, I'm going to care about it way less, because I thought that was kind of like a one and done,
right.
Like it's over for me.
Right.
But now he's back, I'm interested to see where he fights, but, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. I'm not too...
I want to start this off. It feels like Kevin Lee's brother has received 80 times the publication as he has with his food reviews, and it feels like Kevin's almost kind of fallen into the background just slightly. This reeks of a PFL debut.
You think so?
Reeks of a PFL debut. I mean, that's what I think immediately.
I haven't lost sleep over Kevin Lee retiring. I don't know about you guys. I haven't really sat up at night thinking about it, but
yeah,
I don't think he comes back to the UFC. I mean, I didn't leave it on good terms, but I totally agree. This definitely smells like a PFL debut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, now that you guys are saying that, I can totally 100% see it. But, you know, I mean, it's still so weird that his brother is, like, a TikTok superstar.
So famous.
Like, ultra famous.
What's his name again?
He was a MMA fighter. I forget. Keith Lee.
Keith Lee.
It's weird that they're both named starting with a K. But anyway, I remember he started off as an MMA fighter.
Yes.
And then his stuff blew up so much that, like, I think his last fight's in, like, 2018 or something. Maybe even, like, before that. Which makes sense. I mean, you know, if you're a TikTok star, maybe not, you know, don't get punched in the face for
how many followers he has.
No, definitely. But, I mean, maybe Kevin Lee could bulk up, go fight Francis and get his bag, get his $1 million. Because, I mean, Francis is handing out bags over there at the PFL if anybody wants to bulk up the heavyweight over there.
Yeah,
boys,
can you
guys guess how many TikTok followers Keith Lee has?
Rough guess is going to be 6 mil.
I'm going to guess, like, 2.
15.7.
Yo, what? That's
15.
Crazy.
15.7.
Wow, that makes me feel a little inadequate.
Isn't that insane how off both of you were? That's nuts.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
And on that note, I think we're going to wrap. I think we're going to wrap up this episode of Pound for Pound. That's
15.7.
Wow.
I think after this, we should go outside and maybe hit up Rams and go start making some food reviews.
Possibly,
I don't know about you guys.
Cordova's got good ideas.
Yeah, check out the TikTok food reviews. But anyway, that will wrap up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out the UFC Fight Night this weekend and our breakdown of the results next week. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my great co-host Chris Carino and Zach Cordova for taking the time out of their busy week. Also, huge shout out to our producer, Barry Spritzer, this week, killing it on the sticks. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Bound is a production of WFUV Sports.